This is Upfront on the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi, and thank you for joining us today, whether you're listening in on radio or online. Remember to check us out at voanews.com for our previous shows. That's voanews.com/upfront. Now, earlier this month, the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences announced its 2021 list of films that were nominated for the much-coveted Film Awards. The award ceremony known as the Oscars recognizes films and filmmakers for their excellence and cinematic achievement. The 2021 award ceremony was delayed due to the pandemic. Now, this year's nominations include two films: My Octopus Teacher, a South African documentary about a man who formed an unlikely bond with an octopus. This film is on the shortlist for the documentary feature category. The other film, The Man Who Sold His Skin, a Tunisian film about a Syrian man whose body is used by an artist as a canvas. Now, this one is up for nomination in the International Feature category. Now, there are obviously many more great films that were made in Africa that deserve recognition, and that is a conversation for another day. But if we are to read anything into the two African films nominated this year, it is that they both reflect an evolving and robust film industry that is gaining more international recognition and acceptance. Now, as new technologies become more accessible to African storytellers, the quality of films coming from the continent has improved to meet global standards, while more local filmmakers are turning to this medium as a tool to effectively tell their own stories. Now, as African researchers and historians have often said, African stories were often told from a Western lens, which has resulted in the historical marginalization of our narrative. But over the past decade, we continue to see more films from the continent, while appreciating them for both their entertainment value and as a tool for cultural preservation. Films like 28th, The Crossroads, an animation film by Ghanaian storytellers and animators about a historic event in Ghana, then known as the Gold Coast, or movies such as Talia, a dark fantasy drama by Kenyan filmmaker Arnold Mwanjila. Now, if we are to learn anything from these two films, it is that African filmmakers, even with the few resources at their disposal, are able to produce works that are winning global recognition and are adding to the body of knowledge about the continent's culture and history. On the show today, we will speak to the producers behind these two films, starting with Ghanaian animator Samuel Kote, the founder of Animation Africa, an animation consultancy promoting African folklore through animation. He joins me with Oro Ofori, one of the producers on the film. Your film, 28th, Crossroads, recreates an important moment in Ghanaian history. What is the importance of this particular moment, and why is it necessary to capture it in this format?
Well, I think it's quite important because it's that situation that happened on the 28th of February led to the independence of Ghana, led to the independence of some other African countries, and then changed the whole composition of the British Empire. You know, so that's it. And the interesting bit is that footages, I mean, when we were young, we had stories about, you know, from war veterans who had gone to the war. They told us about Burma, about their experiences, and they were all like fairy tales and fantasies. Now, we never really had some of these videos. They were videos that you would pick from some archives from maybe some BBC or some international organization. So in telling our own story, we had to recreate. And that's how come we got ourselves together to recreate all this time. Build some story around these facts. Three war veterans who came home with high hopes were disappointed, and in requesting for what was duly theirs, they ended up being shot and killed.
Okay. And then that led off to this, you know, larger moment in Ghanaian history, also African history. Now, many of these fighters went on to live their lives without any attention or help from their colonial masters, Britain in this case, and many other countries that had enlisted them to fight on their behalf. Many of them dying off with their incredible stories. How hard was it for you to recreate this story?
Well, quite interesting. We have to pick stories from libraries, pick some archival material from National Archives in Ghana, did some research, went online. We spoke to people. There's one veteran who is still alive, late in his 90s, about 100 years old. Who we had an opportunity to pick an interview from him, and this guided us. So because he was on the spot, he knew what happened, he shared some of his experiences, and so that's how we gathered our material, basically from archival sources.
In which countries were these Ghanaian fighters deployed?
They were in Burma. Most of them were in Burma, you know, in the Southeast Asia.
Okay. Myanmar.
Yeah, in Myanmar.
Yeah.
You know, they called it Burma then.
How many were there and how long were they there?
They were there in the hundreds because they were enlisted as a West African frontier force. They were picked from Ghana, they were picked from Nigeria, they were picked from other West African countries. And they were there for most of them spent 5 years. That's away from home.
And I guess also, Oro, you can comment on this. How much of this story is known by a regular person in Ghana? Most importantly, what does it mean that Ghanaians are not aware of such an important part of their history?
Well, for the most part, the basic info about this story is what most Ghanaians learn from school. And even with that, when it gets to the higher level of education, you have to specifically delve into history to get the full details of this this knowledge about this rather pivotal event in not only Ghana's history but all of Africa's history, and that's the reason why a lot of people are not aware. People on their own, based on curiosity, as they grow older, would want to just go out there and do their own research and discover things for themselves. We feel like now it's important to make this common knowledge because we're in that state of being as a nation and as a continent where the importance for us to realize the need to tell our own stories in our own ways, not only to lay straight the path, but also to make sure that posterity comes to build on something stronger and better. It's very important. So, you know, being able to tell the story to the right people, which is the youth, the young people, through animation, is an excellent method that Mr. Korte came up with, and the folks at Animation Africa and Parables Animation Studios, that's the joint studios that got together to, you know, animate this project and bring the story to life. And we feel like, you know, it's the same, you know, method that Hollywood has been using. Make the movie attractive to kids, and the kids will draw the adults to take them to go watch it. And in the end, the story will be told in diverse ways to reach the attention of both the kids and the adults. So, like killing two birds with one stone, a common African thing.
Mr. Korte, you are the animator. Let's talk a little bit about the process. What would you say are some of the elements in this animation that are distinctly Ghanaian? How did you pick them?
First of all, we try to move away from most of the stereotypes where, about the characters. That basically you would find a character, you know, with animation, you would find a character, if it's a woman, if it's a man, if it's a busy man, if it's a beautiful woman, if it's a handsome man. There's some stereotypes that one would need to keep to. But then we decided to bring in the other side, which is wholly Ghanaian culture, depicting Ghanaian culture. So in all the works we did, I mean, we got in modern studio from London, which is also run by a Ghanaian, to help create some of the characters. You know, so we have indigenous Ghanaian characters in the costume, architecture, and all that. So we went around to take photographs of some of the old places, especially in the older parts of Accra, to get some of these architecture, the few remaining architecture, which dates back to the 40s, 30s, so that we recreated them to give us the feel of the 1940s Gold Coast, Ghana, which was then Gold Coast. So a lot of the work, everything we had to do had to be created by local artists. We picked from the universities, and some of them were people who trained from our own studios.
So basically cultural representation was something you intentionally incorporated in the animation.
Now, we had to do that to give it that kind, that identity.
Okay. And what language do they speak in the film? I believe Ghanaians speak over 50 something languages. Was it difficult to choose when you're deciding which language to use in the movie?
It wasn't difficult, or I will tell you, it wasn't too difficult because English is of course the official language, and then we had the other languages, but we chose only two languages, which is Ga and Twi, which are the predominant widely spoken languages in Ghana. And what we try to do, what we're doing is that where they use the local languages, would obviously would give subtitling to enable viewers follow what the conversation.
In the animation, are you recreating the story moment by moment realistically? Or are there bits that are fictional to perhaps better tell the story or recreate some unknown aspects of this particular event?
Well, the facts, I see your eyes itching there. The fact was that three people died. And so that was a fact. And then we created a fiction around these, these characters so as to bring out the frustration and depression they got through. I mean, for else, it's just three people dying and so on. Mm-hmm. So what we tried to do in this story over, almost 80 minutes is for the viewer to feel the frustration and the depression these people went through. They came back with very high hopes. And then the family life, you know, how society saw them and the frustration and the mental situation in which they found themselves. And then how the British, how the employers did not give them what they promised to give them.
In case you're just joining us, this is Upfront on the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi. We are talking to Mr. Samuel Kote and Oro Ofori, part of the team of producers and animators currently working with Parable Studios to produce the animated film that tells a very important moment in Ghanaian history. Again, welcome to both of you as we continue our conversation.
What are some of the liberties as a creator, creative liberties you take when you're recreating a story of this nature? Because I'm sure there will be people who will say, you know what, this part of the story does not fully tell like the gravity of the moment, or this part is left out and things of that nature. You know, when we are recreating such a moment, there will be such conversations.
Right.
Let me just put something quickly before I come see. You know, I think that's one of the reasons why we opted for animation, because our options would have been still images and some video footages, possibly taken from some studios from Europe or some other part of the world. But the animation gave us that liberty to play around the story, and also to be able to visually translate some of these the situation in which the characters found themselves.
Oro, you want to come in?
Right, and like Mr. Kote just rightly said, the animation gave us the liberty to play around with some of these stories and just pump life into them and pump excitement. But above all, pump genuine emotions into them to grab the viewer's interest as they watch the feature animation movie. And there was a little play around here and there, and it was all in line with the normal tenets that you will follow when creating a movie, whether animation or real people, just to be able to grip the audience interest to tell the story. But mind you though, the authenticity of the story is not undermined or hurt in any way. And for those who know the story, they will come to appreciate those other aspects that has been creatively added to brighten up the story and to liven it up. And for those who don't know, it's in there to create that sense of curiosity and to let them ask questions, especially for the teenagers and the young kids. Let them ask questions. What happened here? What's going on here? And so, like I said earlier on, we tried to kill two birds with one stone. And I think Mr. Kote and the other team at Animation Africa and Parables Animation Studio did a great job at making sure that this creative license, where we bring out the movie in a genuine way, but playing, you know, artistically, neat rules is taking, you know, into consideration. And so, yeah, it's going to be quite an interesting, you know, thing to watch. And there are no spoiler alerts for those watching this interview. So if that's what Jackson is thinking of getting to, but you can play the trailer. I'm sure you have a trailer that you can share with your audience. That would be the most we can give you.
For our radio listeners, if you want to watch this movie, where can they find it?
So, if you visit www.oralophobia.com, details will be out there about when the movie is coming out. We had originally decided on a March 2021 release. However, back in late December, when COVID started getting crazier and crazier, we all got together and decided to, you know, reschedule it, because we want to bring it out to an audience that would fully appreciate it without fear of COVID. And so we're looking forward to a new release date. Mr. Kote would have more on that. But yeah, it's going to come out. However, to get updates, just visit www.oralophobia.com. Mr. Kote and I and the rest of the team at Animation Africa and Parables Animation Studios will be sharing updates there. And you can email us, find the email on there if you need to support the project and get in touch, you know, in any way that will help us move this project forward. It's not a Ghana story. It's an African story with a global impact.
Mr. Kote, as we come to the end of our conversation today, I wanted to ask you, as a creative, how hard has it been to work on this project during this pandemic, and how has the pandemic affected your industry?
Well, good and bad. You know, because of the pandemic, our schedules have to change. But the exciting thing is that we have found new ways of working remotely, where we're connecting with people. For example, in the last 5-6 weeks, we've worked with people across the continent on Africa and in Europe, you know, all on this project at the same time. Something that pre-COVID would have come up with excuses and, you know, some challenges and that. But suddenly we are finding out that distances are not a problem, you know, and it's giving us that liberty to do some more exciting things working as a team. For example, the two studios and other individuals who are working on us, Parable Studios leading the project on one side, you know, and then Animation Africa on the other side. And we're connecting remotely. I mean, we haven't met, though we're in Ghana, we haven't met physically in a very long time, but we're working daily, we're sharing files daily, we're sharing files with Oral in the US. This afternoon we've had a long meeting discussing content and all that. And I think that COVID for us has opened a new opportunity to our industry. An opportunity for us to work, you know, in larger teams without coming together in the same space. That was our problem. You know, pre-COVID, you always want to look at a big space, get a big setup like you do in any of the studios in the United States or whatever. But now we're just realizing that in every corner you are, you can still be part of the team and you can still work to meet deadlines.
That was Mr. Samuel Kote and Oro Ofori, part of the team of producers and animators behind the new film, 28th, The Crossroads. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back. But as we do, we'll listen to some of your voices. And this week, as has been the past couple of months, your opinions on an aspect of the COVID-19 global pandemic that we're very much still in the midst of.
My name is Brother Didi. I live in Kampala, especially in Munyonyo, but I work in Juba, South Sudan. I think the solution is education, social education, to educate people and show them that people who are cured of COVID-19 are cured completely. If they do the test and they are negative, they are cured. So they have to live in the area with other people, and there is nothing bad with that.
Yeah, because most people believe that the fact that we have no death rates, so people believe that we don't have COVID, and yet it's real. Yeah. I think that we can see an example is those other countries, America, Italy, those countries that have had mob death rates. So I think we can use those countries as examples so that we can sensitize the public.
My name is Sharon Hirungi. Yeah, they should sensitize people about the COVID-19 so that people should not be discriminated. Make awareness that COVID-19 is real and actually people get cured about it. Yeah, that's what they should do.
We want to thank you for your opinions. In case you're just joining us, this is Upfront on the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi. We're talking about African film with African filmmakers. And from Ghana, we go to Kenya, the home of Arnold Mwanjila, a young award-winning filmmaker. His feature film directorial debut, Talia, which is currently on the International Film Festival circuit. He joins me from Nairobi.
Talia is a dark fantasy set off the coast of Kenya. Basically, it's about a fisherman, a very ambitious fisherman, who finds a mermaid-like water spirit and traps it in his nets. He asks for 3-5 wishes, you know, based on the types of stories he's had about these water spirits. And she's new to this world. She doesn't know anything, doesn't know what he's talking about. But he gets inspiration from somebody else who's encountered these before. And basically, he's urged to think about how much somebody would pay to see this thing, because these are not things that we encounter every day. And so he decides to put it up as a theatrical exhibit and calls on the village storyteller to help him set up and to do that as that. So he keeps it enslaved just so that he can exploit that as a freak. Come and see this freak of nature. Come and see this thing. That's a basic story. That's a basic
thing. It sounds like the classic example where the philosopher, is a French philosopher, Descartes, his view on human nature, he believed that as humans we are capable of both great goodness and great evil, but that choice is ours.
Yes. I like that you're talking about Descartes, because I think even just recently I discovered that I really love philosophy in my movies. And so what I really hope is that there's some philosophy in this movie. I mean, I don't want to be preachy. I don't want to give you a moral lesson. I don't want to be, you know, educational. I want you to entertain. But I think there are very many different levels of entertainment. And one for me, I guess, personally, besides the emotional aspect, is that mental, philosophical thinking. And so when you say what we are capable of, both good and evil, that is something that was very critical in the writing phase of this movie. When I was thinking about it. When I was conceptualizing it, I kept thinking, if I'm going to tell a fable, like, it has to be about human nature. But what aspect of human nature am I thinking about? In this particular case, I was looking at greed. Because the question I want to ask is, who is the true monster in this movie? Is it the mermaid, or is it the guy who's enslaving the mermaid? Right? That was the question that I want kind of going through your mind as you're watching this thing. People who've watched it have come to me and said it's a rather bleak picture and a bleak view of the world. I think there's some optimism towards the end. I leave that to everyone else's interpretation, but I do want to present this thing. It's we are dreamers. We are ambitious. We want good things for ourselves. And that's the case for Babu. This is a guy who feels like the world has taken everything from him. He lost his wife. His child is malformed. You know, he feels like he has got nothing. He's poor. Like all these things, the world has been a burden to him. And so when he finds this thing out of nature, it's I guess, you know, in a way, some form of revenge for him against nature. But he wants to get his own. He wants more out of life. And that's all of us. I mean, who doesn't want more out of life? It's just how we go about it is a bit problematic. And that's problematic for him, because that's not where greed sets in. When you want to get things and you do it at the expense of others, when you do it, that's where the problem comes in. And as fables go, I do play a lot with a lot of different themes. There's the political themes, there's colonization as well as a theme. Somewhat there, because we have this white missionary priest, who's trying to dictate to these guys what is and what isn't demonic or evil. Or whatever. So I do want to play with all those things, but I do want to touch on human nature, because I think that's the purpose of art, is to try and open up that space for us to look at ourselves in the mirror and say, oh, this is who I am and I could be better.
Absolutely. Yeah. Very interesting. What did you have to do to be able to shoot a project of this caliber and production value during a pandemic? That must have been tough.
This was shot a bit earlier than that. It was shot in 2019. So the challenge for me was actually post-production during the pandemic. So that's where the challenge was. Even just getting the project off the ground before we get to the pandemic, because there's a lot of challenges, and I think what the pandemic has done for us all over the world, and particularly for us in Africa, is it's opened up our eyes to what our challenges truly are and what our opportunities truly are.
And the possibilities.
The possibilities. So I think, and it's done that all over the world. There are people who were putting, and I guess this is what you want out of every true story or a good story, is you have this thing that you think is important, and then it reveals to you what is actually truly important. And that's what the pandemic is doing to us now. So for me, before the pandemic, the struggle. This is a low, ultra, 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 ultra low budget film, according to budget levels that come out from around the world.
Being Hollywood production.
Yeah. but, and that's just the nature of the industry in Kenya. You know, we're not a fully fledged Hollywood production industry. If we were, we would be churning out these things every week, you know?
Because you're not short of stories or storytellers.
We are not short of stories. There are so many stories and so many good storytellers. We just lack capacity to do it on a regular and also feed our families. That's the basic thing. And I think even with the pandemic, that's what it comes down to. It's how do you take care of yourselves and still, you know, do these things that you want to do.
Absolutely.
Are you going to sacrifice one over the other? Like that sacrifice, I guess we experience it every day. Those choices, that dilemma, but the pandemic has forced us to like really drill down to see what is important. Yeah. And for me, I think what's come out of all this is that stories help us through these types of periods. And when I look at just what has happened to, you know, the likes of Netflix, Disney Plus, everything, all these big guys, they've taken off because of the pandemic.
Absolutely.
More than they would have if the pandemic wasn't there. And that's just because people are sitting down to watch things. They need entertainment to forget a little bit about their lives. They need stories that maybe reflect some of their lives. They need all these things. So that's where the important bit comes.
That was Arnold Mwanjila, the director of Talia, a dark fantasy drama currently showing on the International Film Festival circuit. We'll bring you the second part of our conversation with Arnold on our next show. And many thanks to him and our other guests, Samuel Kote and Oro Ofori, also part of the production team on the Ghanaian animation movie, 28 Days. Many thanks to you, our listeners. Connect with us on our social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Until next time, as the great Chinua Achebe said, until the lions have their own historians, the history of the hunt will always glorify the hunter. I'm Jackson Vunganyi, wishing you a great week ahead, Africa.